We are the pirates, no quitting. We just stay at home and lie around. And if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything. We're the pirates, we don't do anything. We just stay at home and lie around. And if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything.
Welcome, dear friends, to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are here again. We have braved the stomach flu. We have braved the snowstorms, the second of which is supposedly just hours away coming
through. Oh, no. Another one?
That's what they said.
Oh, well, I am going to get
out of town. It was so bad. It was so bad that my wife got snowed, not snowed in, but snowed out. So she's had to stay last night in Franklin, and I stayed out at the farm, and she couldn't get to the farm, so the kids spent the night at the studio. And of course, I've been sick with the stomach flu after our lovely trip to the 48 hours of frankness out in California. So when I got back, I
wonder if you gave that to my wife, or if she gave hers to you. She's not.
I don't know.
She's been sick too.
I think Heath McClure gave it to both of us. I'm not sure.
But all right.
I'm thinking because he told me that their whole family had it. But anyway, be that as it may, it's going around all of Franklin, and it's the gift that keeps on giving, believe me. And in case you're wondering, I am your host, David Mullen, for the Pirate Monk Podcast. Joining me today, of course, as always, is our fearless leader.
Non-leader. Fearful
Larkin,
non-leader.
And the ever wonderful engineer, Mondo, whose grandmother actually turns 95, I think today, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right, today. And
happy birthday, Grandma.
Happy birthday. Shout out to Grandma, who's a big listener to the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Grandma and all her peeps at the home.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but Nate, we've had so much stuff happening lately. I mean, it's just we went down to the North American Mission Board to talk with them about
for a top secret meeting. Yeah,
for a top secret meeting down there, and just some of their ideas about how we could help minister to them and them to us talking about collegiate ministry, and I'm very, very
porn is starting to show up on college campuses.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
So I've been told.
That is odd.
Yeah.
That's strange and scary stuff right there. I mean, who would have thunk that?
I know. And but, there's occasionally a bit of alcohol on campus as well.
You think?
Yeah.
And a little bit. I had heard that at one time. That drugs might even make their way onto college campuses.
I'm not hard to believe.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll all on their way to a university near you, and but I mean that was one of the things, and then just we had a lot of fallout and pushback on the 48 hours out there in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
And we've had quite a lot of just disjointedness with the Grammys. We're all during that week, which is the big deal around here where we are. And
Now you flew back with half the nominees from Nashville.
I did. I was with actually Bill Miller, who is a Native American artist, and he won. He won his second Grammy.
Nice.
And he's a good buddy of mine. And we talked about actually recovery. The whole time, so me and him and his wife, and of course, you know, Bill comes from a whole tradition of on the reservation and how that all goes, you know,
and it's
a family tradition there. So he's worked his way through a lot of that stuff, and it's really great to hear him and hear him. He's very strong in his faith. Like, I've known Bill for 20 years, I think.
Uh-huh.
And it's definitely the strongest I've ever known him to be.
Oh, that's cool.
Just really has his mind set on other things other than, fame and success and music and all those kind of things. That was wonderful. Yeah, Amy Grant, Vince Gill, Mark from Audio Adrenaline. The guys from some of the guys from the Newsboys, just countless.
They're changing their name to the Newsmen, aren't they?
Newsmen, yeah, they have. Well, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, they have Michael Tate now, so they are men now. They have.
Oh.
They have a black man, a man of color. So there you are. Now, yeah, that's a very good group now too.
Yeah.
And I think there was probably 250 people on that flight. And 200 of them were probably at the Grammys. You know, so. And it was just very interesting because in the waiting for the plane, which was late and everything, I saw people literally that I haven't seen for 5 years. I was able to just go around and have these great conversations with people.
Isn't that nice?
Go around and bless them, you know, in the name of the Pope of Franklin. That's Nate, in case you didn't know.
Oh.
And say, where you been? Oh, I've been out, you know, with Nate Larkin. Oh, yeah. So that was really good. But, you know, we just had so many little things like that coming in and out.
Yeah.
And we've had our time kind of broken up and everything. So we thought that we'd, you know, just pass on the brokenness to you guys and just share sort of little bits and pieces of what's been going on around here and give you sort of a state of the union of the Samson Society. And that's what we're going to do today here on the Pirate Bug Podcast.
Pirates who don't do anything. We are the pirates who don't do anything. We just stay at home and lie around. And if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything.
We're back at the Pirate Monk Podcast, and in this section, as always, we do letters. And Nate, I have a letter that I wanted to read and haven't gotten a chance to, that came in from a brother out west, and he wanted to comment on just the whole William P. Young thing, and he really enjoyed that. And he says, "What a fantastic, heart-wrenching interview today with Paul Young. You and Nate did an awesome job of saying just enough but not too much, as he brought such a strong, raw, transparent pouring out of his heart, life, trauma, restoration. You know, I cried, prayed, and I just had to listen again. After reading the books three times now, I wanted to read it all over again. I've highlighted many lines that spoke significantly to me, and now I imagine there will be more. And those I already noted will have even broader meaning and significance, and they can all be related pretty much to Paul's journey. Looking forward to spending time with you guys when you come out to California." And we did do that, and that was a lot of fun. So,
yeah,
that was a pretty powerful. I think I told you the same thing. I listened to the William Young interview several times because it was just like there was just a lot there. There
tons.
Was just a lot of meat there, a lot of meat on that rabbit that we chased.
Well, here's another nice, encouraging, affirming letter that we got. After 48 hours, a brother who flew down from the Oregon coast to attend.
Mm.
He says, "Nate, I just had to write since I didn't get the chance to thank you personally last weekend. I came to 48 hours fully expecting growth and blessings, but I was completely unprepared for what God had in store for me.
Mm.
It's as though God reached down and filled every empty space in my heart that I knew about and a few that I had no idea were there. This level of brotherhood and authenticity is something that I had never before experienced, and yet it feels as natural as breathing, almost like I'm breathing for the first time. When I came to the intensive, I told myself that I'd like to get a Samson group going in my area. Now I know I must do it. No other options. The men in my area are hungering for what we shared together. On the flight down to California, I did my usual nose-in-the-book routine to not be bothered by the mass of humanity around me. But on my way home, all I could see was the ache, hurt, and need in every face. I shared a beautiful conversation with an Asian businessman in the seat next to me, something I never would have done before. I really am certain that my life will never be the same. I know my marriage is forever blessed. I shared my amends letter with my wife yesterday, and through many tears, the remaining wounds from my lies and betrayal of so many years just healed. Thanks seems so inadequate to express my gratitude for the work you and Allie have done to create a safe place for men and our wives to find real fellowship, healing, and to experience being a living part of the body of Christ. God bless you and Allie. Honored to carry this mission to the Oregon coast."
Isn't that
nice?
Really good.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have spoken to us about starting groups lately. And one of those, a good friend of mine who's on the NASCAR circuit, and I'm sure they don't do much drinking or drugging or pornography on the NASCAR circuit. But just in case they did, he wanted to have a place where they could
talk about stuff.
Yeah. And and he's actually a very strong believer and a good brother.
Yeah.
Really love that dude. And so one of the things we had talked about was sending him a case of books.
We'll do that.
For a lot of people, that is the place to start. That's what I wanted to get at, is that if you've been listening to the podcast and you've been just, you know, hungry, I just need that. That is the place to start. You know, getting the book, reading the book for yourself, giving the book to even two or three people.
Yeah,
that you just think, you know, I know that they're probably right there in terms of having authentic brotherhood, not in terms of like necessarily having an addiction or having some problem, but in terms of being able to be a safe place for each other, and you know that you are basically somebody could just guide you and massage the thing a little bit.
Yeah,
it would turn into what you're hearing about here on the podcast. And a great place to do that and to find resources is right there in the book. And you can find it at Amazon. We've found it at pretty much every Christian bookstore, except for a few.
You have to ask for it. It's under the counter, right. and they'll give it to you in a paper bag.
Hey, you guys are used to that, so hey.
I just shipped out a carton yesterday to a guy, another 48 hours of frankness guy from the California weekend. Trucker. Boy, if there's a population that can use some brotherhood, it's truckers. It's this enforced isolation.
That's right.
In that cab from place to place, and such a transitory, transient life, and all kinds of stuff can breed in that kind of isolation.
Right.
So this guy is going to take books to chaplains in the big truck stops, and really ask us to pray with him about coming up with the best plan for planting Samson meetings across the country for truckers.
And that's really, like, I think that for those of you who have been sending those things, how can we pray for you? How can we help? Like, really, that's what you can help with, is like helping us think through, pray through how to, like, what is the way to organically grow it without making it become like a men's movement.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
To have this thing that's very.
This is not marketing.
Right.
It's good planting and cultivation and brotherhood.
And
we
it's
want
not
it to
an
be
organization. It really is an organism. It really is.
Yeah.
And like we've seen where it's just morphed. Like everywhere you go, it's a little different here than it was over there. And especially going all the way from East Coast to the West Coast. You know what I mean? And
speaking of the East Coast, I got this neat letter from Bill Hermistone up in New England. Thought you might want to know that the Broken Shields held its first meeting a couple of weeks ago at Pleasant Street Baptist Church in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester, baby. Worcester.
We had six men attend. After the meeting led by Jeff B., which faithfully followed the outline in your book and the meeting manners videos, everyone hung out for another half hour or so, getting to know each other on a more informal basis. We're looking forward to our next meeting next week. Mm. Do you have any suggestions on how we can expand the meeting? As I know, there must be a gazillion guys who would benefit from meeting together but either don't know about our meeting or who are too ashamed to admit their addiction and, like myself, spent years trying to deal with it alone with God and wondering why they don't see the recovery and freedom he promises.
Mm. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Now, I wonder what the Broken Shield is all about. That's kind of cool.
That's a cool name.
It really is. I think the one for the truckers, just the pirate truckers, come on.
I like that.
The pirate truckers, and then what do we do for NASCAR? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they can come up with something. I know. These guys need some help. I love these guys in Orlando. Got a note from Jonathan Noel. Happy to report that the Samson Society of East Orlando celebrated its one-year anniversary this past Sunday night. That nice?
That's awesome. Now, that's my neck of the woods, too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That makes me happy. You know?
Yeah.
Now, have you been to that meeting?
I have not, but I'm looking forward to going through there. I think we.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're going on a missionary journey, are you?
I think I might. Yeah. I am 53 years old, and I have decided that God has planted a gene that activates around the age of 50, 52.
Mm-hmm.
That in January or February, suddenly there's a voice in the back of your head that says, put on dark knee socks and go to Florida.
Go south, young man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, good. So the pontiff of the pontiff pirate is going
I
down.
I really
to make a mission.
Wish you would not call me that.
I'm sorry. You're dead meat around me. You know, that's my game. That's my job. Words, baby. Words.
Hey, can I read you something?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I want to read you something. It's on the Samson site. Someplace, but I just love this thing. It's several months old now, but it was sent to me by Jamie Kane. He wrote it for the Faith Cafe's curriculum.
Oh, okay.
For the winter 2009 quarter. This is a beautiful description of one man's experience in a Samson meeting.
Mm.
On Monday nights, I learn how to die. Sometimes that tiny room in the church feels like an old-time surgery auditorium. The light, harsh and unforgiving, the table, alone in the center of the room, the overhead windows crowded with faces. I climb up on the hard table. When I ask after the surgeon, a faceless nurse presses the scalpel into my hand. I'm afraid it's you, sir. Good luck. I hate Monday nights.
Mm.
Welcome to this meeting of the Samson Society, someone intones. This weekly ritual has become a lifeline for me and my friends. And that is what we are, friends, bound not by strength but by weakness. We've all said, I never knew what friendship was before this. Our Monday night meetings began as a few square feet of sanity in a life that felt out of control. Mine is not the worst story in the room, but trying to categorize our lives in terms of best and worst is an exercise in futility. One of the cardinal truths of this group of men is that we're all broken. We've all wandered. We all hang by a thin thread. I love Monday nights. We've learned together that this thread is a cord stronger than anything we imagined. For the gospel occupies center stage. Together, we experience life as it should be this side of Golgotha. We confess our sins, let other men know our weakness, and hear not advice or admonition, but just thanks. It may sound like the stuff of nightmares. In one sense, it is my nightmare. I lay open my chest and expose my heart, fierce, fragile, faithless, to other men. After the time we've spent together, they see through my charades. Still, they are kind, understanding. They smile and nod when it's my turn to talk. I need Monday nights. My life doesn't revolve around our meetings, but they provide a touchstone, a waypoint for my journey through life. I've forged friendships with traveling companions, too, and they constantly remind that no matter how dark my path, I am not alone. For all this, I'm more grateful than I imagined possible. I can't imagine what my life would be like without the men in that group and the Monday nights we've spent talking and listening to one another. It's Sunday night as I write this. I dread Monday nights. I want Monday nights. On Monday nights, I remember how to live.
We'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. We we're back at the Pirate Monk podcast, and Nate, what are you reading these days?
What am I reading?
Yeah,
I'm reading engineering reports. Lots and lots and lots of engineering reports. God's blessing the business.
For those of you who don't know, engineering reports and the like are the tent making of our favorite pirate, who is busily probably working on one now while we're sitting here talking. if there's a spare second, you just turn over and there he is. Allie puts up these great pictures of him on Facebook of, here's Nate enjoying another great day of vacation, and it's Allie, like, you know, out there frolicking in the ocean, and you see Nate, like, you know, typing away on the computer. It doesn't matter if they're on the beach or in the mountains, in Ireland, the Cotswolds. I mean, it's always the same. He's, like, buried in his little computer. So,
gotta pay the bills.
It's the curse. You spent the first half of your life buried in a computer for other reasons. The second half of your life, you're chained to it to make money for the family and everything. But I have been reading a really good book. And
tell us about it.
Well, I am going to tell you. It's a new book from Timothy Keller, pastor in New York City.
Good old Tim. Yeah. That guy's a stud.
He is. He really is. And his book is called Counterfeit Gods. Now, his last book was called The
Reason for God?
No, The Prodigal.
Oh, The Prodigal, yes.
And really, he's like redefining that story for us and telling us that the prodigal, it's the prodigal father, really. It's a misnamed thing.
Exactly.
Because when you give prodigiously, prodigal, you know, prodigious, the same words. It's the father in the story who gives prodigiously, like he's giving prodigally, and it's the son who basically goes so far away. Now neither one is really doing anything, and so really when you redefine that, you can see, oh, he was giving equally from his spirit and from his heart to each of the sons, and they each had their own, like, so here's the one who's basically the pirate who ends up in the pig pen.
Right, right.
And here's the other one who's like the pastor who's the monk, yeah.
Right, right.
And so he's like united them in himself. And that's just really like insanely great idea and a different way to look at it than you normally do. And I'd love the prodigal son story.
So do I.
I always have. And because when you go to it, I mean, you can go to it 1,000 times, and God will always show you something new about yourself and about those around you. And and also, it doesn't hurt that it was George MacDonald's favorite story, and he wrote lots of books that were just based on that one story, and he just wrote that same story over and over again in different forms. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that about George MacDonald. But this book is called Counterfeit Gods. And in it, Keller says that basically, we have these things that some people call addictions, you know, and he's saying, but really, if you just backed it all the way down and you just got down to it, it would be sin. And that's kind of like what we've said in the past.
It's sure, like, absolutely.
This is sin. And once you open your eye gates and your heart gates to these things, then that's when you can do something so prodigiously, so prodigally, you do it that you actually cut off the neural pathways that allow you to like cope with stress, pressure, pain, rage, happiness, all these things.
So this is sin that alters us physically.
Yeah, and so sin that alters us physically
and makes us sick.
That's right, and makes us sick. And he's saying that really, if you get right down to it, It's a worship of some type of idol, you know. And if you it's like almost all these things in your life that you have that you worship more than you worship God. It's like if it's money, power, sex, respect. Don't you all know somebody who like puts money before God? Somebody who puts sex before God? Somebody who puts power before God? Somebody who puts politics before God? You know, all these things, and it shows us all these ways that we handle and try to run our lives ourselves, but really make our lives unmanageable. And
he even put family before God.
Even family, and he says, in fact, he says almost all idols are good things. They're mm-hmm. almost all things, almost to a fault. They are things that we would say are good: prayer, family, church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, praying, like all these things that we kind of put in front of God, though. You know,
right.
And use it as a way and a means to manage our life rather than letting God sort of have the thing.
Right.
And so basically he says, like, do this. If you took the thing out of your life, would you have a sense of sorrow?
Mm.
Or would you have a sense of sorrow? Like, man, I wish I had that, let's say it was tobacco. You know,
right.
I wish I had that cigar that I could smoke, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it would really help me to, like, calm down and think through this thing that I need to, like, think through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have my wife, and I'm going to go, like, talk to her, and that's a legitimate way. I have my friend, Nate, that I can go talk to. I'm going to go talk to Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you have a sense of desperation?
Oh, yeah.
A sense of desperation. Like, there is no hope. Like, you know, there's no way. I have no way to deal with this thing. I'm, like, lost. I get. There is no other way to cope with this. Mm-hmm. This is it, and I'm just frantic.
I've got to do it or I'll die.
Right, and he said the key operation there is, like, no hope. There's absolutely no hope. There's nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
There's no other means to get there.
Yeah.
So you've cut yourself off from grace.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't really see any other way to, like, deal with the thing. And then he shows almost exclusively down the thing how Jesus has fit the bill, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And in some way in his life been that exact thing that you're looking for, that you're trying that you're substituting the idol for.
Mm.
And that, like, just as he has as the snake can be Satan, or it can be the snake on the pole,
right?
You know, saving people.
Oh,
you know what I mean? It's like it can look different ways at different times to people, you know,
right.
it can come from left field sometimes. So, the whole thing just gives you a handle for you to look at it theologically and more, we're saying not so much terms, but a construct to
a conceptual framework
to, like, that you can hang, you know,
recovery on.
That's right. And it helps people who are around you bridge that gap between, like, the neurological, physical side of addiction and the theological
mm-hmm.
and the unseen side and bridge that gap for them. Because a lot of people, you know, and I'm sure that many of you who are listening have heard people say that they're former addicts, and the other people say, no, I'm an addict, or other people say, I'm a recovering addict, you know. And it's like, which one of those is true? And to me, it's just a lot of semantics, and it's how you think about it. But words have meaning, and they have power, and they do sort of determine how we sort of look mm-hmm. at things. But I think in the, like, we've heard people say, yeah, I'm not an addict. I've been healed from that. You know, I used to be one, but now I'm not.
Right.
But I could fall at any time. So that to us is the same as saying I'm a recovering addict,
right,
because I've been an addict, and
I have not developed immunity against my besetting sin.
Right.
And I have freedom from it.
That's right. And if I could fall at any time, I'm going to have a propensity to fall in a certain direction and in a certain way for the rest of my life. And so are those people who are saying that I'm no longer an addict.
Mm-hmm.
They know in their heart that when they say, but I could fall again at any time, so I have to keep guard over my heart, my eyes, my ears, my mouth. They mean that they're going to fall in that certain way.
Yeah.
And have a propensity. So we're all kind of saying the same thing.
Right, right.
And so basically what Keller's encouraging us to do is to go in and destroy these idols.
Mm.
And to you know, how in the Old Testament we see, well, you know, they went in and they destroyed the idols, but they did not tear down the high places.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, you can make all these analogies that you see in the Old Testament. It really is powerful stuff. And then he said, so therefore, it's not enough. It is not enough to just go, okay, I'm going to stop this bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to stop snorting cocaine. I'm going to stop drinking a gallon of, you know, hooch a day. I'm gonna stop looking at internet pornography. And you even may be able to stop it, but that is not enough.
Right.
And so he starts to quote one of our favorite old dudes, Thomas Chalmers, you know, and from that sermon that you can find online just by doing a search, you guys.
The Expulsive Power of a New Affection.
The Expulsive Power of a New Affection. And that basically is just to say that you can't just not do something anymore. You have to go in and replace it with something that's equally, actually more powerful. Mm. And that's an affinity for Jesus. So it's like your relationship with him needs to be like sort of brought to the surface. And I think we do that through the daily disciplines.
Yes,
and
I do too.
That is, of course, a
stage on the path.
A stage in the path, and then it's prayer and...
Well, prayer, study, and self-examination, yes.
That's right. So you're continually doing that, and that's sort of like what the whole 48 hours of frankness has done, you know. And, you know, I know it's funny that we're always, like, reading different books. Now, this book was for a completely different reason I was reading it, but it just applied to what we do.
I want
to
thank you for summarizing it so well, because now I don't have to read it. No, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it.
I mean, there's so much that I'm
not even
telling you.
It's a treat to read Tim Keller anyway. He writes.
That's right. He writes. And I have a dear friend that gets most of the books that we suggest here, but also other ones. And has been on airplanes and stuff like that. And had people, just like you were saying, that the guy would have a conversation that he normally wouldn't have.
Yeah.
With the Asian gentleman. Same thing has happened to my friend. And kind of an unlikely person to be carrying around like a stack of books on recovery, you know, and always gets into interesting conversations.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that we're all kind of in that place where we just want to be able to like say, yes, there is a physical and a seen side to this thing, mm-hmm. and there's an invisible and unseen side to this mm-hmm. thing.
Spiritual,
And there's a pirate side, and there's a...
And there's a monk side.
And there's a monk side, and they need to be married and put back together.
That's beautiful.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
We're back at the Pirate Monk Podcast, and we're actually having a State of the Union for the Samson Society.
Man, that's a tall order. I don't think this qualifies.
Well, it kind of does. I mean, we're just like tying up all the loose ends that are there. We've been looking at different groups around the country.
Oh, that's true.
That are getting together. Yeah. We are looking at, as we said before, going to universities and colleges all across the nation.
Yep.
Want to hear from you. On what would be the best things to address while we're out there. We want to hear from you that you'll really be who will be praying with us, who would maybe even come and help serve, because we're going to need local people on the ground in some of these cities.
Yeah.
And then we actually need suggestions of cities that you think would be best served by these things. And we need to be this thing that's going to be pretty widespread across the country in different areas so that we can be fair to everybody. But this is definitely a pilot program, and so that's one of the things. Also, we've covered the 48 hours out in San Luis Obispo, the fallout from that. We've covered the Grammys, for goodness sake.
That's
and,
true.
And the
that's
Samson true. Involvement in that. I think it definitely qualifies.
All right. Okay. All right.
And you know, we even had an inaugural meeting or two. Like we had a couple of people who were looking to start groups. The fellow who's on NASCAR who wants to
right.
start a group, and then we had a group.
Charles doing truckers.
That's right. The trucker pirates.
We got the
there.
New meeting in Worcester, and, Massachusetts.
That's right. The new meeting in Worcester, and that's what I was going to say was that was their inaugural meeting. Do you have anything that you know you would share with them as being kind of important to make sure they do?
Yeah. One thing I picked out of Bill's letter was that they had the meeting, followed the format, which is good. Not to say you can't vary from the format, but innovate later. Try the standard thing first. Mm. And he said that afterwards they hung around for about half an hour for informal conversation, which is good. What I would really counsel, and I've seen this make a big difference in other meetings in other places, It's very tough to combine the meeting and the meeting after the meeting and to do them in the same place. Yeah. It's a difficult thing to do and to do justice to both. I wasn't able to make our meeting in Franklin last night.
Right.
Allie was sick.
And the snow and the wet.
Yeah. Although, even in the blizzard, they did have a meeting.
All right.
There were I don't know, somewhere between 15 and 20 guys showed up.
Well, that's good.
And I went down to the pub for the meeting after the meeting.
Right.
Picked up some food for Allie and sat down and spent some
time
with the guys.
Which is just as important.
Which is just as important as the meeting.
That's right. Maybe even more so in some ways. Yeah.
But somehow I don't quite know how it works this way. But there is a shift in the dynamics when you actually change rooms.
Yeah.
And it does help to go someplace. You know, Jesus saw some importance in breaking bread with those he walked with.
Definitely.
And it's something about changing places, getting around a table, getting some food and some drink. And there were some good connections made because we had a couple of new guys. I had spoken at the Christ Community Men's Retreat over the weekend. We had some new guys that were there and nice connections made between some veterans and some rookies. Some guys engaged in some fairly deep conversation, the kind of stuff you can't do in a meeting. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the next couple pieces of advice I would give to Bill in Worcester is be more deliberate about the meeting after the meeting and tell guys, got to find a way to carve out 2 hours, even though it's a one-hour meeting, an hour for the meeting, an hour for the meeting after the meeting. And if you possibly can, find a way to get out of the Pleasant Street Baptist Church, whatever it is, and go down to a pizza joint or a Chinese place or a coffee shop or a pub or someplace and talk.
What's whatever's good for you. And of course, there may be considerations. I mean, if you're all a bunch of drunks, you don't want to go down to the pub. So
that's true.
That's probably not the best idea.
But
a change of location and a change of vocation, because really the calling of the person in the room with you when you're having a meeting is really to be a listener.
Yeah.
But the calling of the person when you get to the pub or wherever is really to be an interactor with you.
That's true.
You know, and the location is always important. I just feel that as you said, like, it's more about the actual what are you doing. Like in this room over here, it's really more about the sanctity and the safeness of the environment. Then you go over to the other place, and it's really more about the breaking of the bread. And, you know, even like when I have good friends that are Jewish in Israel, and when they break bread, it's a big honking deal if somebody, like, dips the bread in the oil and puts it to your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like now we're blood brothers, basically. You take the bread from my hand.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And which is where the L'chaim thing comes from. So it's like
pretty
deep, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, that really is, like, I see that. I see the sacredness in breaking of bread and the sharing of wine.
Yeah.
Not so much the drinking of beer, not so much in, like, going out and having alcohol and stuff like that, but just the sacraments of those things, you know, of sharing them together. Being in a place where there's definitely a brotherly environment.
Yes.
And now you're kind of going back and forth on the whole thing.
Now, the other question that Bill asked was how to kind of spread news about the meeting.
Mm.
I don't know if I've told the story on the podcast about the guys in Alabama who came up.
No.
Got a phone call. This has been a couple of years now. But some guys from a meeting in Alabama wanted to come up and visit us, visit our meeting. So we said, come on up. They actually got they came the day of the meeting, had dinner with a bunch of us, went to the meeting, went out for the meeting after the meeting with a bunch of us, then spent the night. The next morning, a bunch of us met them for breakfast, and then they drove back to Alabama. So at breakfast, I asked these guys, I said, how'd this meeting get started? They looked at each other, and the guy says, well, one guy says, he says, it started with my wife. He said, she saw the book, Samson and the Pirate Monks, at the grocery store. I had no idea why it was at the grocery store, but apparently it was. She says, I bought it. She bought it. She read it. She loved it. She gave it to me for Valentine's Day.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So he says, I read it. He says, I loved it. He says, so I gave it to a friend. But before I gave it to a friend, I wrote on the inside, This is my story, too. If it's yours and you'd like to talk, call me. And I put my phone number on it. And I also put, don't keep this book. Give it away.
Mm.
Well, that guy read the book, gave the book away. Well, here 8 guys came up from Alabama, and they'd only bought one book.
Oh, those jerks.
And I don't care. You know,
no, that's beautiful, man.
No. Wasn't that wonderful?
That is awesome.
So you can use the book. It's a way to qualify people.
Right.
Some people pick up that book, and it's not where they are. It doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. And you don't want those guys at your meeting.
Right.
Other people will start reading the book.
And they just get it, and they won't put it down. And right away they're looking for some way to get plugged in.
And there are, within any community, there are those who regularly come into contact with men in crisis.
Mm.
Pastors and Christian counselors.
Sure.
Who, by and large, their reaction to Samson tends to be overwhelmingly positive.
Mm.
We get a lot of referrals in our local Samson meeting from counselors and pastors in the area.
Mm.
So if you've got a book, if you got some books, you know, pass them out to pastors and counselors. Right. Make sure you put a phone number in there.
Yeah.
Get some circulation.
That's right. That's a good thing. And, hey, I just think that's a great idea and a great way to end the show today. Because, Nate, we're not here to sell you books.
No.
Most of you have read the book anyway. So, but I think what a great idea. Like, give the book to somebody that you love. Be it male or female, don't forget to put your name and your number in there. You know, and
you've given a few books away, Bill.
Bill Mullen, that's my uncle.
Yeah,
Bill.
Okay.
Yeah, I have. Actually, when I read it, I bought 100 books and I gave 100 away. And I'd like to think that I've been a small part of the moving forward of the. Yeah. Of the Samson Society, but I think for Valentine's Day, because I mean we're just right around the corner. It's Valentine's Day. Why not? Like, give a book to somebody you love. Tell them this is my battle. I hope it's not yours, but if it is, you know, give me a call and give that away for Valentine's Day. I think it's a great idea. I think that was a great idea.
Isn't that cool?
I never would have thought of that. You know. But we so appreciate you being here and listening to us here at the podcast. We are at 2,300 members and growing all the time, and we do not take that for granted. We do want to hear from you, though. So if you could send us your ideas, your encouragements on all these things we talked about today.
And, your and questions, your criticisms.
That's right. We want it all. And
letter bombs?
Not that.
Okay.
But you can reach us by just going to the SamsonSociety.org site, and there's plenty of places there to reach us. You can also reach us just by going to letters@SamsonSociety.org. Again, that's letters.
That's our email address, letters@SamsonSociety.org, or you can hit up either Mullen or me on Facebook.
That's right.
We are the pirates who don't do anything. We just stay at home and lie around.